Societe has been managed privately since its founding in 1805, meaning that our partners have dealt with the same challenges facing all entrepreneurs. Our owner-managers are themselves entrepreneurs who, like our clients, want to build an even stronger firm to pass on to the next generation. Over more than 200 years, we have built up experience and specialist wealth management expertise that puts us in an ideal position to offer independent advice. Entrepreneurial clients feel a deep connection with our partners as they can speak with them on the same level, business owner to business owner.
Young age, growing up in rural Kent in southern England, Christopher and Graham Rayburn had to make their own fun. 4 miles from even the nearest shop, the pair and their brother Stuart were inspired to explore, and often spent their time making things. Their father worked long hours in the city, but always told the boys he would help them to build anything they wanted on the weekend, if they drew up detailed plans during the week. And it's a lesson that taught the brothers about design, craftsmanship, and quality. Both Graham and Christopher would go on to study fashion design and graduate from the Royal College of Art, where they later set up a studio to collaborate and hone their skills. It's around this time Christopher had become obsessed with discarded military items, including old jackets, maps, and parachutes, and began turning those perfectly good materials into functional garments. Over the years, he's become one of Britain's most celebrated designers and has collaborated with brands like The North Face, Victorinox, and Clarks, and is today the global creative director for Timberland. While Christopher made a name for himself under his eponymous label, Graham went on to become lead designer at global cycling brand Rafa, one of the company's original employees, where he drove product innovation that has changed the way the world thinks about performance garments. After a decade at Rafa, last year, Graham left to again work full-time with Christopher, with the title of Performance Director. And earlier this year, to mark the 10th anniversary of Christopher's first remade collection, a series of pieces crafted from a single recycled parachute, the Christopher Rayburn label became simply Rayburn. From their atelier in Hackney Central in East London, set in the old Burberry textile factory, Rayburn's remade, reduced, and recycled ethos is a benchmark for sustainable, considered design. 5 days a week, the space is open to the public for workshops, with proceeds going to the Worldwide Fund for Nature, while the company's lab is also a testing ground for inspiring the next generation and changing the way we think about buying, making, and recycling clothing. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. For today's program, I sat down with Christopher and Graham at Midori House to hear the story of Rayburn.
It's a credit really to Graham that he was really a pathfinder for me personally. I mean, 3 years older, and we both went to art college first, then a degree at Middlesex University, and then on to the Royal College of Art. And I'd sort of seen the pathway that Graham had been taking, particularly when I was at art college and then the early years at degree, because Graham and I had both been interested around these functional materials and the original garments and items that the materials were used to construct. It was quite a natural step that then, because I loved the materials, but actually particularly as a student, if you wanted to buy the materials on a roll, either they were incredibly expensive or very rare, because a lot of the pieces that I was interested in, particularly wool jackets, for example, from the 1950s or 60s, you know, actually those materials were sort of very difficult to find. But what fascinated me was that I was able to buy original jackets at the time. I was going to Goldhawk Road to Portobello Market, and I was able to buy jackets that were still wrapped in bales, in Hessian and waxproof paper, twined up still, so still bound. They'd never been worn, and they were from the 1950s. So It was, for me, really a sort of quite pragmatic approach to finding material as much as anything, and almost this archaeology of then going out and finding all of this amazing stuff that already had a story and a character and an emotional attachment to it that you could then build into products.
I want to come back to that perhaps later, because I've seen you described as a designer and archaeologist in a sense. But Graham, let's bring you in here. Where were you at around this time when you're both studying and you go off to college? Are you thinking that you're going to be someone that makes things with your hands, designs things because you've been doing it in your childhood. But where were you going? You actually went on to study women's fashion, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I think it took me a long time to realize I'm definitely more of a product designer, simply working in textiles, actually. Mm. The time, the two-year MA at the Royal College of Art was in womenswear, but it gave me a lot of time to actually experiment and really think who I was as a designer. And the way that fashion and textiles was fitting in with a very fast-moving world, the advent of technology at the time with, I graduated in 2003, the advent of mobile technology and smartphones coming online meant that the way that people moved and interacted and socialized was shifting and changing. And I was really interested in the way that people's wardrobes would change with a modern city.
That's quite interesting. And you would actually go into work with a lot of high-tech fabrics and all different things because you ended up moving in to work for Rafa for a long time. And am I right that Christopher introduced you to Rafa?
Yes, it was a kind of one of those funny friend of a friend kind of moments, I suppose, where we had a studio space that we were designing and producing our own work in. And got an introduction to Simon Luke at Rafa, and we were both cyclists and still are. We were able to understand very, very quickly what the purpose of the product was, what it needed to do, and we were able to turn around ideas very quickly, which I think is still very much a benchmark of the business these days now, that we can design, develop, and make something extremely quickly if we need to. And so through that, I ended up going full-time with Rafa Racing for over 10 years, which was a fantastic journey to go on. I was employee 13, so seeing it grow from a one-room operation to the amazing company it is these days, it was a brilliant ride to be on with that, the team of people there.
I can only imagine. Yeah, it's grown into this huge global thing, and obviously a lot of what they have to do, I imagine, carries on from what you were doing there originally in product development and playing with different fabrics and things like that. Christopher, is it right then that you both actually started working together then? You shared a studio. I didn't know. I knew you had the studio after college and you were doing freelance pattern cutting and things like that and started working with different brands, but you were actually working together first.
Yeah, sure. So when we left the Royal College of Art, I suppose the only thing I knew at the time was I didn't want to work full time for a big brand. And so if you don't want to work kind of full time, you kind of have to start your own thing. But it was very, very embryonic. And we were very fortunate to have a small studio space, in fact, to begin with outside of London in a small town called Luton. And it was an opportunity, really, to test and experiment. And so that's exactly what we were doing in our own way. There wasn't really any intent at that point to be thinking about retail opportunities, for example, or collaborations. It really was just an opportunity to get hands on and to create. And so obviously Graham, with the focus on cycle, and then between us really still, I realise now what was the embryonic kind of beginnings of where we're at now, bringing together sort of functionality and fashion, which is really exciting. That's definitely what we were experimenting with at the time.
And I think there that was the really interesting thing looking back, that actually we realised that there were these industrial surplus materials that had loads of character in them that we could, as Chris says, experiment with and put them into garments and actually create these really interesting things using parachutes or snow camouflage ponchos and things like that, which were far more interesting than if we'd have gone to a textile shop and bought a bolt of fabric.
Am I right that in and around this time is when the remade sort of what the company does today, that sort of really started? You started to remake things that you were finding.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd sort of started the process, I suppose, during my degree, so at Middlesex University back in 2001. And I'd done a small menswear project in the first year at university. And if I'm being really honest, I don't necessarily think my tutors understood it fully at the time. And it kind of sort of fell a little to the wayside. And then I completed my degree and went through to the Royal College of Art. But it was there that the tutors, particularly Wendy Dagworth in particular, really, really picked up and focused me on the idea. It'd be my personal project as I'd gone into the Royal College. And as Graham touched on earlier, the fantastic thing about that course is you basically have 2 years to really focus your attention on what you're passionate about. And so it'd been an amazing opportunity over the course of the 2 years at the Royal College to hone this idea. I hadn't called it Remade in England at the time, but it was around the experimentation of surplus materials and essentially deconstructing items that were already out there. And then absolutely, as Graham mentioned, we then really focused on that together as we left and set up the studio. But all of that at that time, I'd say, was quite experimental. It certainly wasn't as a reaction, I would say, to what's really so topical at this moment around responsible design, all of those things. I've always been very open that for me, it was absolutely a love of material first, the functionality and that archaeology that for me just led to a really pragmatic way of designing.
You bring us up to today, and it is quite an interesting time in the world of fashion. And you've gone through this in a number of years in your career now, but it's quite a buzz thing now to be sustainable, to be responsible. And you've sort of been putting that on the map to an extent, I guess. But where did that really start for you? Because it was this one idea, remaking things, but that's morphed into more.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really proud now that the work that I've been doing since showing at London Fashion Week all the way back in 2009 now, I suppose at the time very much as a sort of pioneer within those conversations, now has become such a focus within the industry. And the first collection that I ever showed was just one military parachute that I deconstructed and then actually remade into 8 garments. I sewed most of it myself, and then things have really sort of grown from there. And actually the, I suppose, exciting thing for us is that now people really understand the same vocabulary around responsible design. They also know that I think things have to change. And for us, it's been, I suppose, a real honour to be provoking and disrupting the industry, to be asking questions of itself as we've continued to grow. And actually, just on that note itself, we're really proud that we still make all of our remade garments over at our own atelier. It's called the Rayburn Lab over in Hackney Central. It's actually the site of the old Burberry textile building. So it's a really nice, I suppose, bit of serendipity that we're now in a space that in itself is remade and has that history behind it. All of our pieces there are very limited edition. Each one's individually numbered, and we make everything on site. The truth is, if we only did the remade aspect to our work, we would be very, very niche. And in order to grow, we introduced 2 further lines, one which is recycled, where essentially we're taking PET plastic bottles that hopefully we're all diligently recycling these days, that of course can be sort of ground into chips, made into pellets, made into fibre, and then actually remade into anything. It could be another bottle. We're actually using fabric that's made from plastic bottles. Over and above that, we also do part of the line called Reduced, and that's really a focus on waste reduction. A lot of items like organic cotton made in Portugal, and then also denim, for example, will be made in places like Black Horse Lane Atelier over in Walthamstow. So we call it the 3 R's. So we either remake, reduce, or recycle. And that's the way we approach everything that we do.
Very interesting. And I want to come back to the atelier, but Graham, I'm just curious about the timing for you, because you've done collaborations with your brother. Even when you were at Rafa, you did a few different pieces over the years and were able to show off different textiles and recycled things as well, made in Britain, garments that you did. But what was the timing earlier? I mean, I think the beginning of this year that you decided to come back and rejoin the brand or become a part of it. What was important for you in the timing there?
That's a really good question. Chris and I have always worked together, sometimes more directly, and an example would be the Raff and Rayburn 2 Seasons collection that we did. But I think we've always interacted and sometimes a little bit more covertly to get work together. So actually, I joined Chris full-time in March 2018. For me, it's a really exciting time for the business because there is so much interesting developments happening around the way that people are considering and shopping and buying and interacting, you know, with products, with brands. I think that the layers of additional value beyond just the actual price point on a product, understanding the provenance, you know, the people behind it, actually the accountability of what happens to that product at the end of its life now. So for me, it's a really exciting and very fast moving time that we're actually working in. You look now at what's happening with the high street and people actually being much more conscientious about the way that they're spending their money, that suppliers have to be much more accountable. And this idea of products, you know, not just having one life, but second life, third life, fourth life, you know, it's a really interesting arena that we're moving into now. So my title is Performance Director. So I've shifted from looking at performance apparel in a context of the fastest, the lightest, the most breathable for world-class athletes, now into accountable design responsible areas.
That's quite interesting because, as you say, it comes in this time where we're all focused on the high street and how companies can do better. But it's almost in an interesting time that this is always what you've both been doing and kind of been looking at the same time. Is that right? Is that fair?
It's completely, yeah. I think that kind of a much stronger connection with products and community is so important that people are, you stoke some curiosity, you make people interested, you get them start questioning, whether it's simple things like fit or color. colour or the actual fibre itself, where it's from and why it's been selected. If you can take people on that journey and entertain and educate and get them curious about products, then it's so much more of a richer experience, I think, for the community.
If we look at the full life cycle of a garment, in your idea and at your shop now, at your studio, you're saying we can remake things and we can turn it into something different, but we're thinking about what this could be. This could be turned into something down the road, but we haven't been thinking that way for a long time, but we're starting to, and I think some of your designs are meant to show off exactly that.
The truth is actually we used to think about things in that way, and we sort of lost our way a little bit, I think, as individuals and as an industry, because certainly the sort of generation, I think, before us that really grew up at points with that make, do, and mend attitude and really understanding the value of garments and sort of the products around them, I definitely think there was that focus there. And then all of a sudden, we as a generation grew through this period where we could kind of access all of this stuff, actually, and that's the truth of it, and a lot of it quite affordably. And we sort of shifted to this point, I think, where certainly when I think about just the way that sometimes companies operate, there could be a tendency that once a purchase has happened, that's it, fantastic, you know, good luck sort of thing. But actually, we at Raeburn have always looked at things the other way. So we've offered free repairs, as an example, on all of our pieces and still continue to. But then I'm really interested, and now with Graham coming in as well, about the opportunity to really close the loop. And when we look across the opportunities within the industry, essentially there are three ways of doing that. When we think about synthetics, so recycled materials like the PET plastics I mentioned earlier, absolutely you can potentially recycle and recycle again. Then when we think about natural materials and the opportunity to essentially put things back into the earth in a healthy and in a responsible way, that's another kind of pillar. And finally, this opportunity to have things that really can continue to endure and be rejuvenated and be repaired. So they're really the three ways that we're looking at all of our products, really. And we really think that we have an obligation to design and, I suppose, make that connection as well with our community. You know, we like to talk about our community rather than consumers, for example, or sort of customers. And actually, we've really found that by being as completely transparent as we can as a business, and by opening the doors and by welcoming questions and by giving free tours and by doing free workshops and all of those sorts of things that help to better make that connectivity, it's working because there's a real interest.
I really appreciate the way, I think I've heard you speak in past about, you know, the need for there to be change in the way that we consume and that we make and buy products. But it seems to me that you're not very shouty about it. You lead by example in the products that you're making, but you're not as much on a soapbox telling people they have to change and they have to change. Now, you, in a sense, are quite fair about it. People need to have clothes. They need to have affordable clothes.
Yeah, I think that you're spot on with what you've highlighted there. I've always thought that our obligation as a company is actually to design in the most responsible way up front. And I love the fact that our kind of community at points, they might come into either the Raeburn Lab over in Hackney Central or one of the fantastic stockists that obviously have our products around the world. And I love the fact that they might go in, see your item amongst many others, try that piece on, love that piece, potentially even purchase that piece. And it's only when they get that item home that then they'll see the labelling on the inside, they'll understand the provenance of it. So for me, it's really a design-led conversation and also an opportunity. And absolutely, I think that we really shouldn't focus on the sort of negatives here. This is about how we can move positively. And as you say, not stand on a soapbox, but definitely we need to make changes. And our attitude has always been, let's get on with it. Let's prove what we can. Let's be transparent about it. Let's work collectively as well, and let's see what we can do to really make a difference together.
Graham, this often comes up on this show, and I often ask people who are the drivers of change in this world, if it is big business or the consumer demanding things, or perhaps the smaller designers that lie somewhere in the middle there. But you both work with huge companies. I mean, you've worked with North Face and big companies like that in past. I mean, tell me a little bit about that in the world that you exist in between that.
Could be a very long answer here. So we're very mindful that there is so many factors influencing this that I'm optimistic that actually change at global, national, governmental level needs to happen, aligning with the UN sustainable commitment goals that every nation has signed up to for 2030. on a consumer level, people now are so much more demanding of brands' integrity and authenticity, you know, to actually know that where they're spending their money is actually going to have a positive impact. Yes, ourselves as a business as well, like we are trying to initiate as much change as well. And a lot of that is through education and information clarity on what we're doing and demonstrating that. You know, it's, as Chris says, we're very transparent. You can come in and see the apparel being cut and made and constructed in-house. So there are so many different drivers. As going back to what you were saying, ultimately, it's got to look good and it's got to be affordable, because people talk about sustainable businesses, but if it's not actually doing those things and creating desirable pieces, what's really interesting, as Chris just said there, is if you've created these beautiful looking products which feel great, which fit great, and actually underneath they've been designed and constructed in the most environmentally responsible manner, then fantastic. Like, that's actually what we're looking for, not leading with this kind of environmental considerations.
I think the other thing that's important here is just, it's a difficult topic, you know, for people to understand. And the very nature of trying to change something and newness in general can be very, very challenging. And I think the way that we've always approached this is in a very positive way, but also with a sense of humour as well, and with a realism that we know that through the work in Raeburn, we have a fantastic opportunity to be, I think, at points absolutely a pioneer within the industry in our own way, which at points, you know, we've made a lot of mistakes. And again, very open and honest about that. But we've, I think, also challenged ourselves and at points other companies. And you're right, over the years, we've been so fortunate to work with some pretty big companies like Clarks, and just thinking through as well, MCM, more recently taking on the role as Global Creative Director for Timberland, of course. You know, this is fantastic. And I think through the work at Raeburn, you then have an opportunity really to really make a difference on a global scale when you start to work with these bigger companies as well. And the analogy that I always find quite interesting personally is that I almost see us almost like being the, you know, amoras, those small fish that swim along the sharks, and they actually clean sharks. And I think to myself, we have an opportunity not just to clean the shark as you're swimming along, but actually you can then, you know, you can have a word in its ear, right? And again, back to that thing of having a bit of a sense of humour with this. Actually, if you then have the opportunity to steer the shark, that's where things get really interesting. And that's the way I've always seen our role in the industry.
That's probably the best way I've ever heard it put. That is quite interesting and quite clever as well. I'm just curious about the purpose and design as well, because some of the things, the more fashion-forward pieces I'm thinking are quite purposeful in the way that they show the materials and the construction. I'm thinking you've made things from parachutes and life rafts and all kinds of things. But there are also more streetwear pieces. There's all kinds of different things, but it's designed with a purpose to show sort of that whole life cycle, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think particularly early on, the products we were doing were very conceptual. We were asking a lot of questions. We were going out and finding incredible materials. So whether it be life rafts or fireproof material or all of these things that we deconstructed and remade into other items. And then as we continue to develop and evolve, we've absolutely put in, I would say, more commercial in the right way platforms. And now with Graham joining as well, that's the really exciting moment for me. So actually, our 10-year anniversary, anyone that knew Christopher Raeburn as a label, in fact, we stopped with that. With Graham coming in, we've become Raeburn. And it's absolutely fusing the functionality that Graham brings with all of that fantastic experience. And then still working, I think, with that archaeology aspect that we've done before. So you're still going to see incredible things like 1950s silk maps coming through. And more recently, we've worked with beautiful airbrake parachutes. But on the other aspect, to really speak about the range of the product that we have, now the level of recycled Japanese materials coming through and the quality and the fit and the value that Graham is bringing to the products, that for me, we're really excited about as a company.
Where do you think we're at in the world of making our own things? Because there came a time with fast fashion in the high street where we shipped everything to Southeast Asia or abroad. And now I think the biggest concern in the fashion industry is, okay, we can say that we make things in Portugal or it's closer to here and it's in a good factory. But we used to make everything in this country. I mean, I'm from Canada, but in this country, everything used to be made here. And my great-grandfather came from Glasgow, near to where the Singer factory was. And, you know, things were made in this country. But do you think we're at a turning point where we can be proud again to be a cutter, to be a sewer, to say that this stuff is made right here?
I think actually it's about looking at things truly globally now. And for me, it's always been about making the highest possible quality product in the right place for that. And as an example, I think here in the UK, we're incredibly good at working with wools and leathers, accessories, natural materials, but actually less so with sportswear, for example, and potentially some of the recycled materials, which tend to be better made, let's say, in other parts of the world. So I think it would be really remiss just to say, hey, we need to do everything here or everything there. I really think it's about finding the right balance. But the thing that I take a lot of inspiration in is that absolutely we are, I think, going to see some pretty big changes in the next 5 to 10 years within the industry. And absolutely, there are now a lot of pilots happening by big brands about how they can localize some of their production, how they can be more focused on the individual customer rather than thinking about mass production.
Right.
The other thing I think in all of this, I think that a lot of companies want to change, but it isn't easy. And it's a very, very complex subject in general. And there's so much kind of behind the scenes in terms of supply chains and, you know, sort of the manufacturing side of things, let alone what happens to the products, as we talked about, after they've actually been purchased. So it's not going to happen overnight. But I do firmly believe now it's about companies and brands, designers, individuals, governments really working together. And we do need to find this right way of sort of galvanizing a lot of positive energy that at points is being, I would say, I suppose, worn down in isolated pockets. And if we can bring that together, I think we've got a chance.
Graham, we are rapidly running out of time, but I want to hear just a little bit about how the journey's been for you and coming back to join your brother, because obviously you were working for a big global company for a long time, and certainly you had a lot of pull, but there were a lot of other people to please there at the same time. What's it like to work for your brother now? You as you said, you've worked together over the years, but is that an easy relationship? What's that been like?
I think it's always been very fluent and very efficient for the both of us, actually, and exactly having worked together when we were at college, supporting each other for final shows or whatever it is, there can be a really good unspoken just awareness around like what needs to be done and how to get on with things. I'll just go back to the discussion about the studio as well, because I think it's really worth highlighting. For me, the really exciting thing is that how unique the actual studio, the Raeburn Lab, is in terms of its versatility, how nimble, how dynamic it is. The amount of different kind of settings that we have for event spaces, for maker workshops, for retail space, to have this highly agile, nimble, dynamic space that is totally transformative, I think is a physical reflection of the brand itself as well, the company, and our approach towards products, towards collections, towards collaborations, that we're able to actually work smart, work efficiently. And I'll go as far to say, I mean, it's unique, and I'm not sure there's anyone else doing anything like this, certainly that we really know of. And so having joined, I'm absolutely on fire. It's dynamite.
You just got back from a big cycling trip in Scotland, so obviously you're still riding, but what are you designing for? Where are you taking your inspiration from?
So the thing about the cycle wear working on the professional teams was their kit was basically a Mayfly existence. So 365 days and then would be replaced by next year's sponsors. So you'd see these tiny incremental differences in specking a fabric that was 10 grams lighter or a different zipper that would run freer or something like that. These very small changes, like, what's the difference? Like a fabric is more breathable or whatever. But actually, when you start to look at that over 5 years difference and you put two jerseys together that are 5 years difference, there's a massive amount of improvement and innovation that's actually occurred. And so in my mind, exactly the same is happening there around how environmentally responsible materials as well, these new innovations that are actually coming through. It's so exciting, actually, what's possible. And as back to what Chris was saying, exploring the potential for perpetually recyclable materials, which might then open up new design systems. It might open up new ways of selling clothing. So actually people are on a subscription service. And when your T-shirt or your socks are worn out, you can return them the same way that you might do with a glass bottle to a recycling bank. So I think it's super exciting what's happening. And I'm wondering what fashion will start to look like as a result of these more environmentally sound production methods, dye processes, finishing techniques. So actually, you know, what fashion will look like and sound like in 5-10 years time. It's a super exciting time because we have to change. It's not a question of if, it's when, and what are the catalysts to actually achieve that.
Just quickly, Christopher, last question to you. I'm curious how you feel this whole journey has gone for you and how you've enjoyed it.
It's been an amazing journey and it's been fun, you know, step one. And the truth is, when I left the Royal College of Art, I didn't know what was going to happen, or even the first time I showed at London Fashion Week. You know, the way that things have grown since then, the way the conversation around me has then continued to sort of evolve and now focus on Rayburn, you know, that is incredibly inspiring. And the other thing I think within all of this is that I really feel personally we're just getting going. I really have always thought that. I was very fortunate to start the business when I was relatively young. And now, what an honour to have your brother joining as well. You know, it's quite a rare thing, and some people might be concerned around that, but I've just seen it as such an opportunity to bring together our strengths and our sort of skills. And I'm really excited about the way the company now is evolving, and particularly as we continue to think about what retail will look for us as a business going forward. It's a really, really exciting moment. And now, the work I'm doing at Timberland, the learnings from Rayburn and how we can really start to make a difference on a global scale. You know, what an amazing position to be in. And as I sort of look to the future, I'm full of hope.
That's all the time we have on today's show. Thank you to Graham and Christopher Rayburn for coming in to share their story. Thanks as well to Max Bauer, who mixed and edited this show. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.